everyone. I'd like to welcome you to this Ag Farmville webinar, and this will focus on the Southeast region. We'll ask everyone to please mute your phone so we can minimize background noise and hopefully make this as clear audio as it can be as we work through PowerPoint and discuss some of the new features of the Farm Bill. Hopefully everyone is able to see the PowerPoint on their screen. We will be moving through these slides. And as it says on the introductory slide, if you have questions, please type them into the chat feature, and as we work through the presentation, we'll do our best to address your questions. I would also like to point out that the full PowerPoint presentation will be posted on the National Cotton Council's website at www.cotton.com. And that will be posted today. So there will be a number of examples in this presentation. And also, let me remind everyone to please mute your phone. We're picking up a good bit of background noise. In the interest of time, we'll not be able to go into depth in all of the examples that are included in the presentation, but as you have a chance to review, the presentation will be up there for sure. I'm going to again continue to move. I'd like to remind everyone that as this new farm bill is being implemented, it is a fundamental change in cotton safety net. We certainly faced a very challenging environment in this farm bill debate, both from the standpoint of budget pressures as well as the pressure for the need to address the longstanding trade dispute with Brazil. So direct payments and countercyclical those in some detail. And then also, I'd like to remind everyone that the Farm Bill does maintain the marketing loan for upland cotton. There are some changes in the administration of the marketing loan, and we'll discuss those at a later point in the presentation. And then growers are faced with a number of program choices, and in particular, as they look at the programs that are going to be delivered by the Farm Service Agency. There are a number of program choices that are facing growers over the next several weeks. And then as a targeted phase-in, many of the provisions will apply to the 2014 crop, but the new crop insurance provisions will not apply until the 2015 crop, and then even then some may not come fully on board until the 2016 crop. As a final point of reminder, I would just make a note that sequestration, which is those across-the-board budget cuts that have been with us since 2011, unless otherwise noted, those do still apply primarily to FSA-delivered programs. They do not apply to crop insurance, but just be aware that if we talk about some of the various programs, sequestration is still a feature that exists within this Farm Bill. The Farm Bill did not turn off sequestration. Just as a
to the conference group, the please enter your passcode followed by the pound key.
And again, I'll encourage you to please keep your phone muted as we're going through this. For 2014, since the new insurance products are not available,
the conference is now being recorded.
Phone, please. We'll have the new insurance products will be available in 2015, but for this year, a transition program is in place for the 2014 crop. That's delivered in a manner similar to what the direct payments under the 2008 Farm Bill. Sign up for that program has already occurred. When its calculations are done, it equates to 5.4 cents per pound on all 2013 base acres and direct payment yield. I think most of those payments have been conveyed out to the countryside now by FSA. I would just say, and as a point of reminder, that is subject to a payment limit, but is a separate $40,000 payment limit. As we talk about the payment limits that are in effect under this Farm Bill more broadly across other programs, the transition assistance payments apply to a separate limit. So when we talk about some of the challenges we're facing with the payment limits in general, just keep in mind this is a separate payment. And again, most of those have most of those payments have been conveyed out to producers. So that was the support for the 2014 crop. And again, to the 2015 crop. And for 2015 is when we will see new insurance products available. And one of the primary upland cotton is a new product called the STAX Income Protection Plan. STAX is the shorthand name for it. It is a new revenue insurance product that's available in 2015. It's available for purchase on all acres planted to upland cotton. It will be administered by, as are other crop insurance products, administered by USDA's Risk Management Agency. One key difference between STAX and existing insurance, for the majority of existing insurance purchases, is the fact that indemnities are triggered by revenue at the county level, combined counties if necessary. And so STAX indemnities are not triggered based off individual experience. So that's a key feature that producers need to be aware of, is it's a difference between in STAX. It will be based off county experience. Most of the purchases today are based off of individual experience. To the greatest extent possible, it will be offered by both irrigated and non-irrigated practices. And we'll talk about that availability as we move through. But again, a new revenue insurance product that's available. Just to kind of continue to discuss the basic concept as by way of introduction, you know, the chart you have in front of you is a graphical representation that on the left-hand side is the vast majority of cotton acres today have some type of individual coverage, and that's usually somewhere between 60 and 75%. So there's a deductible that is between 40 and 25%. So the concept of STAX was to then come in and give producers an additional option of insurance product with which to purchase that, again, would...
The conference is in lecture mode.
Okay. It would act as a complement to existing products. And so you can see by the right-hand side that there is going to be a deductible. That would be a 10% deductible at its minimum. If county revenue is above that 90% line, then there's no indemnity paid under STAX. If we have county revenue decline into that portion of the bar labeled STAX, then that is the point at which indemnities are triggered. And then as if county revenue were to continue to decline, indemnities would increase, but at the point with which county revenue reached 70%, then STAX indemnities would be at their maximum. And so it will not cover those deeper losses. It's designed to provide protection for a level of risk for which producers today, in general, did not have affordable options. And so this is hopefully designed to give another risk management tool that can hopefully be an affordable tool for producers to try to enhance their risk management protection on their cotton acres. So in terms of basic calculations that underlie STAX, and these numbers are just for illustration purposes, we will have an opportunity later in the presentation to discuss some specific numbers at various locations now that we have additional details from RMA. But at the beginning of the year, RMA will calculate an expected county revenue that will be based off of the insurance projected or base price, if you prefer to use that terminology, which is just determined in the same manner as existing insurance products. So for cotton, that uses the December cotton contract and then looks at a period that in general is either, depending on the location of the cotton belt, either from mid-January to mid-February or is the month of February to determine that projected price. That's multiplied by an expected county yield, which is established by RMA, and the product of those give the expected county revenue. And we will talk about the approach that is used to determine expected county yields. So the expected revenue is determined, and then once harvest and ginning is concluded, RMA is able to determine what the actual county revenue is. As with existing insurance products, the insurance harvest price is determined in the same manner, again, looking at the December contract for a period coinciding with harvest. That price will be multiplied by the actual county yield, also which is determined by the risk management agency, and that will give actual county revenue. That actual revenue is then compared to, if a producer has purchased a 90% stacked product, it is compared to 90% of expected county revenue to determine whether or not an indemnity is paid. If you have a producer with a 90 to 70 stacked policy, then 20% of the expected county revenue would effectively establish the liability or the maximum indemnity that could occur under that policy. In this particular example, you have the 20% of expected county revenue is $135 per acre. In this particular example, the indemnity that is calculated would be $75. So that's a run through of just the basic concept. At this point, we'll work through additional details just to familiarize you and introduce how stacks will be available, specifics in terms of how the calculations occur. And the first issue to address is the availability of stacks. And it will be offered for 2015 in all counties in which an underlying cotton crop insurance product is offered. Across the 17 Cotton Belt states, that is a little more than 700 counties. So essentially, it is full availability of stacks in 2015. If a producer has the option of buying an underlying yield or revenue product or an existing yield or revenue product, then they're going to have the opportunity to purchase a stacks product. It will be offered at the county level to the greatest extent possible. But this is an area that needs some further discussion just to familiarize producers with how stacks is being offered in some locations. In the instances where a county is not large enough to stand on its own, or a county does not have enough acres or producers in order to offer an actuarially sound product, then RMA has developed a methodology that will allow them to combine counties together in order to reach that critical size that will allow the stacks product to be offered. And we can just kind of work through, in a general sense, the steps that RMA goes through in making those determinations. And the first is to look at the criteria to determine if a county can be treated as a standalone or primary county. And that is to determine, first, does it have 10-plus years of history? And these evaluations are done by practice as well. And so a county may have one designation for one practice and a different designation or a different treatment for the other production practice, depending on the number of acres and the number of producers that are engaged in that practice. But first, ask three questions. One, whether or not there's 10-plus years of history. Are there 10,000-plus acres in the past 5 years, and are there 20-plus producers in the past 5 years? And those are the benchmarks that RMA has established for determining whether or not a county can stand on its own. If basically you're able to answer yes to each of those three criteria, then the stacks will be based off of the final yield for that county, and it will be by practice. So the expected and the final yield will be by practice for that county. This accounts for approximately 80% of cotton acres. Not 80% of counties fall in this designation, but 80% of acres by practice fall in this designation. So this does account for a majority of the acres, but obviously it still leaves some unaccounted for acres. And to address those, then the next question was to look at counties that are not able to stand on their own or be primary. Are they adjacent to a standalone or primary county? And if that is the case, then that smaller county can essentially be paired with its larger neighbor in order to create a two-county group. So again, the concept is basically first evaluate the county on its own, and then to evaluate a collection or a grouping of counties to get to that critical size. Now, I will say when this designation occurs, it does not change the treatment or the manner in which tax is administered for the primary county. In this approach, the primary county's data is used for to assist the smaller county in reaching that critical size of producers and acres, but still the primary county, for the purpose of its operation of stacks, still continues to operate on its own. So some counties will be treated in this fashion, and that will account for another 7 to 8% of the acres. Now, if a smaller county is not adjacent or contiguous to a primary county, then RMA looks at a situation of combining several counties together or creating what is referred to as a circle group, essentially just trying to combine that small county with a collection of its neighboring counties, again, for the purpose of coming up and reaching that 10,000 acres and that 20-plus producers. And by doing that, that covers another 7 to 8% of the acres. Now, in some areas and in some regions, moving out to a circle group, essentially one ring of surrounding counties or neighboring counties, may not be enough. So it may be the case that RMA actually has to look at a larger grouping, which is referred to as, in some cases, a double circle, so essentially going two counties out to develop a grouping large enough to reach that critical mass of producers and acres, or looking at using NAS crop reporting district aggregation. So in some instances, it will require moving to that level of aggregation to be able to deliver the product or offer the product. And then there are some cases where you would have outliers where it's very difficult to even find, going to a double circle or a NAS district, enough acres to get to a point where it can be offered by practice. And so that's what is referred to as outliers. And really, there's various approaches to try to address these outliers. And these groups account for probably 1 to 2% of acres by practice. And in some cases, it is going to be the situation that, this occurs in portions of the Southeast region, it will be the case where there's not a stacked product offered specifically for irrigated practice. And I think specifically in Virginia and North Carolina, the stacked product that is offered essentially represents the non-irrigated acres, and then a producer who, if there is a producer who is irrigated, he would essentially be purchasing the stacked product for the non-irrigated acres. So there are those situations, and I think that will become a bit more evident in terms of the explanation when we look at an example and the yield numbers that are used to go into the stacks examples. But essentially, the aggregations are designed to make stacks available across the cotton belt for all cotton producers. Now, we always get a lot of questions about the counties and the county groupings. Those are more generally referred to as production areas. Those are available on the RMA website. The URL is posted here on this slide. And again, this PowerPoint will be posted on the council's website, so you can go back and look and pull out that URL. But there are maps that will allow a producer to click on their state, click on their county, and then see the explanation for exactly how the county is being treated by practice. Also, we understand that those groupings will be reevaluated on a periodic basis to determine if the designation is still the most appropriate designation. So just because somebody is a primary county today doesn't necessarily mean that in 3 or 4 years they will maintain that designation and Likewise, the opposite is true, that if a county is not primary today, if there were to be an increase in cotton acres, then when that decision is reevaluated, it could be the case that they become primary county. So production areas are important because it is the experience of those production areas that determines the yields that are used to trigger the stacks policy. Both the expected and the actual yields are based off the production area. And this is an area that needs further explanation because it's a bit of a new emphasis for, or a new direction for RMA in terms of how expected and actual yields are determined. And it's been the case in the past with area-wide products administered by RMA, and specifically thinking about the GRIP and GRP products, now more formally known as the RP products. Those are administered using data as reported by the National Agricultural Statistics Service, so another branch or another department within USDA. For stacks, it will be administered based off of data as determined by and as calculated by the Risk Management Agency. So it is based off of RMA data, and that is a change from the area-wide data that's been used in the past. And a couple of rationale for moving in that direction was that it would allow practice-specific data in more areas, because there will be some locations where NAS may only report a yield for all production practices, and RMA will be able to differentiate by irrigated and non-irrigated practices. It also allows RMA the ability then to develop those production areas and essentially aggregate counties together. And effectively, the records for individual producers are the yields that are used to determine the county averages. The county average is essentially a weighted average of the experience across all producers. Now, in determining an expected yield for the stacks product, RMA will look at historical experience. So they will look at the last 15 to 20 years of historical data for that county or production area. They will develop a trend yield based off of that historical data. Hopefully, if there's been some increasing yields in a county, that will be reflected in a trend that increases and can change in future years. So what's announced for 2015 would not be the same expected yield that would be announced for 2016. So first, there's a trend analysis approach to determine an expected yield based off of the trend approach. And then by statute, in the definition of stacks, it also looks at the five-year Olympic average and determines then which is the higher of those two numbers, either that trend yield or the five-year Olympic average. And that higher number is the one that goes into the expected yields for stacks. And here's just for a county drawn at random just to illustrate looking at the RMA data, which is shown for irrigated and non-irrigated, and how that might compare to the NAS county yield. So in some cases you'll see, you know, overall agreement between the two, but you certainly see some years where there are differences between RMA data and NAS data. Now, one note to make you aware of is that the historical yields for the production areas, so those historical actual yields from 1991 through 2013, have been made available by RMA. They are on the RMA website, a little bit difficult to find. We hope we've provided an option for you that will be a bit more user-friendly, a bit more accessible, and the URL is all included in the chart that you have in front of you. But we have posted on our website a database that will two ways to get at it. One is a database selection where you can pick the state and pick the county and then be able to see the historical yields for that production area, or you also have the option to download the full spreadsheet that has the yield history for all counties across the Cotton Belt. So that information has been posted, is accessible on the cotton.org website, so we certainly encourage you to look at that, because I think that becomes important as we talk about another feature of stacks. It's important for a producer to know how their experience compares to the county experience. So again, yield data is available, but again, some changes in terms of how the yields are determined relative to area-wide products in the past. Now let's move along and talk about, as producers look at customizing or selecting the most appropriate Stax product, just familiarize you with the choices that you have for the 2015 product. And the first is to talk about just the basic Stax as a revenue product. As with existing revenue products offered by RMA, it does include harvest price protection or the harvest price option. And many of these choices we structured as if you were looking at the RMA website and how you would work through the selections that a producer has in front of them, these would be the types of choices that producers can make selections regarding. And one would be to either select the basic Stax, which is called Stax Revenue Protection. And again, that includes the harvest price option or harvest price protection, which means that if the harvest price is higher or above the projected or base price, then any yield losses are indemnified at the higher harvest price. And most acres of cotton today include revenue protection. That is revenue protection bidding based off of the individual yields, but it's also a revenue policy that includes the harvest price option. So that's overwhelmingly the choice by producers today as they look at their crop insurance purchase decisions, and that is the basic design of Stax. But to make you aware, it does also come with an option of having the harvest price exclusion. That affects the rates. That would lower the premium a bit if you looked at Stax with the harvest price exclusion. But just to make you aware, there are two choices there in terms of trying to customize or tailor that Stax product to your own individual needs. The second set of options to talk about is really the coverage band and the choices that a producer can make in terms of how they select that band. And previously with or currently with existing insurance products, producers really only select one number. They select at what level coverage starts and then understanding that that coverage extends all the way down to zero. In Stax, a producer has two choices to make, both the upper end and the lower end of the range. At its widest coverage band, Stax will cover from 90% of county revenue down to 70%. But be aware that both of those ends of the band, both the upper and lower end, are adjustable in 5% increments. So producers can not be all the way up at 90. They could be at a lower level if they were concerned about premium cost. They could also adjust the lower end of the band and not have it go all the way down to 70%. It could be at a number higher than 70. And I think that's particularly important when producers look at how this interacts with underlying coverage. And we'll come back to that in more detail a little bit later. But just be aware that both numbers are adjustable. That gives you really 10 different options in terms of customizing or picking the most appropriate coverage band. And all of those choices will affect, obviously, the premium cost of the product. Another choice to make would be what is referred to as the protection factor. This is not a feature unique to Stax. It already exists in other area-wide insurance products. It's for lack of a better word, it's considered to be a multiplier. They can be selected in one percentage point increments that range between 80% and 120%. And essentially, the protection factor allows or scales the indemnity either up or down by 20% depending on where that protection factor is selected. If a producer chooses to select a protection factor at the 120%, then if there was an indemnity triggered at the county level that was $50, then if a producer has selected that 120% protection factor, then that county indemnity of $50 is multiplied by 1.2 to determine that specific producer's indemnity. In this case, would be $60. So it is a way to scale up or down the indemnity. It does come with, obviously, some premium cost if you choose to scale up. It comes with premium savings if a producer chooses to scale down. I guess one point that should be reiterated is that by selecting a different protection factor does not override or negate the fact that there must be a 10% loss in county revenue in order for any indemnity to be triggered. So it doesn't negate the deductible. That 10% deductible is still a part of the policy, but if the county experiences that 10% loss or a larger than 10% loss in order to begin triggering indemnities, then that level of county indemnity is multiplied by the protection factor to determine what the individual producer's indemnity will be. Again, it's been a feature of area-wide products, other area-wide products, and based off past experience, it would appear that many producers have selected the protection factor at the maximum level, but it is a way to increase the liability, increase the potential indemnity under a stacked product. So be aware, just another set of choices, and graphically to depict the impact of the protection factor, we're using an example where we've got an assumed expected county revenue of $600. On the horizontal axis is a percent loss in county revenue. As that loss of, you know, approaches 10% or is less than 10%, there's no indemnity triggered. As it begins to exceed 10%, then there's an indemnity triggered under stacks that's denoted by the blue bar. If a producer has selected the 120% protection factor, then that producer's indemnity would be based off of the black line. If they selected a protection factor at 80%, then it's based off the red line. So again, simply scaling that county level indemnity up by plus or minus 20% based off that choice of the protection factor. Now, in terms of calculations of liability as well as calculations of premiums, that's obviously as we were going through doing some of the Farm Bill sessions, particularly earlier in the year, this was one of the most often asked questions would be the premiums associated in with stacks and the eventual cost to the producer of a stacks product. And again, we do have now those details that have been released by RMA. So they are available on the website. They've released the expected yields for all counties and production areas. So along with having the historical yields that we talked about a few slides prior, then producers are also able to see exactly what the expected yield for their county will be for 2015. So that gives them a sense of what potential coverage is available under the product. And then premium rates have also been published. And so those numbers are available. Now, at this point, it does, since those are revenue products, it's a range of premiums associated with the various price volatility factors. Those price volatility factors will not be determined until we go through the price discovery period in early 2015. So be aware that producers, if they were looking to develop a premium cost estimate, they would have to make two assumptions. One, what would be the price established for insurance products in 2015, and then an assumption regarding the price volatility factor. All of those calculations can be done on the RMA website. It's a long URL, but there is an actuarial information browser that is available for producers to get a better sense of what a product may look like. Now, one quick comment on the premium subsidy for stacks, and this was established in the 2014 Farm Bill. It is set at 80%. You can see how that compares to the premium subsidies that exist for other insurance products. It is equal to the highest premium subsidy that's available under other insurance products if you do enterprise unit protection up to a certain coverage level. And I would also point out, too, that regardless of the coverage band that is selected for stacks, whether it be at its fullest of 90 to 70 or whether there be a smaller coverage band, the premium subsidy percentage of 80% does not change. The same subsidy percentage is applicable to all the coverage bands that a producer might select. So just be aware. Now, at this point, we get into a number of calculations and again, examples. And for the interest of time, we'll not be able to really delve into all of these in great detail. But like I said, these will be in the PowerPoint that will be posted, and we encourage you to go back and look at those. And we've included one for each of the Southeast states, selected a county, and looked at the data for that county and exactly how the calculations would work, or a close approximation of how the calculations will work. And in the case of this one, we have one for Isle of Wight, Virginia. And again, we can look through. I'm gonna probably just kind of walk you through using the one for Edgecombe County, North Carolina. But it illustrates one of the key points that we need to make for portions of the Southeast region, and I'll get to that in just a second. But let me just clarify a couple of points in terms of these calculations as we look at it for both irrigated and non-irrigated stacks product in this county. The insurance projected price, as I mentioned earlier, is not determined until we get into the January-February price discovery periods. Right now, I've assumed 65 cents per pound, so that's an assumption at this point. That'll obviously change as the market develops between now and then. But the expected county yield is known. And if you notice that the irrigated and non-irrigated numbers are the same at 807 pounds per acre, that's essentially the non-irrigated yield that's estimated, the expected yield for non-irrigated production practices for Edgecombe County. And this is an illustration, and it was the same would hold for counties in Virginia as well, that in RMA had determined there were not enough acres in each of those states for irrigated production practice with which to develop a stacks product specifically for the irrigated production practice. So essentially, irrigated producers will be purchasing the same product as a non-irrigated producer. That stacks product will be based off the non-irrigated production experience in that county. And obviously, that's the overwhelming majority of acres are going to be non-irrigated, and so we're not enough irrigated even when you look across the entire state to be able to offer that stacks product. Now, having said that, irrigated producers who purchase that stacks product will still be required to report their yields to their insurance company and subsequently to RMA, so that RMA can continue to keep a record of the irrigated yields. Those irrigated yields don't affect that stacks policy, but if we were to see increases in the number of acres that were under irrigation in some of these southeastern states, then it may allow for an irrigated product to be offered at some point in the future. But right now, it's both practices will use the same yield of 807 pounds. That is multiplied by the projected price to develop an expected county revenue of $525 per acre. 90% of that number is $472. And this example assumes essentially the fullest stacks policy, a 90-70 stacks policy. It also assumes that the producer selects the protection factor at 120% or 1.2 in order to determine what the maximum indemnity would be, and that's $126 shown in row 5. Now, the other critical piece of information in these calculations is the premium rate that's established by RMA. In this case, we've selected, for purposes of illustration, a 0.328 premium, so that's essentially a premium rate per dollar of liability. Now, that premium rate is based off of a price volatility factor of 0.15, and that is an assumed value at this point. Again, those premium rates are published across a range of volatility factors, and once that volatility factor is established for certain, then the appropriate premium rate will apply to the calculation. So this should still be viewed as estimates, but the 0.15 volatility factor is very similar to the factor that was in place for the 2014 crop. So under that assumption, total premiums would be $41 per acre for a stacks product, and then to determine the producer paid premium, the 80% premium subsidy is applied, and that is where we come up with the calculation of $8 per acre. So again, under a couple of assumptions for price and price volatility factor, in Edgecombe County, North Carolina, it would be a stacks premium of $8, regardless if you're an irrigated or a non-irrigated producer. Now, as we move through, again, we have an example in Orangeburg County, South Carolina. We'll can look at that in more detail. I'll go go along and just make a couple of comments on the Georgia example, which is Tift County. And here we see what, once we move into South Carolina, Georgia, and the remainder of the southeast states, we begin to see a differentiation or the ability to differentiate and offer irrigated and non-irrigated products. And this is illustrated when we look at row number two, the expected county yield in Tift County. For irrigated is 1,111 pounds per acre. Non-irrigated expected yield is 826. And then we also begin to see a differentiation or differences in the premium rate per dollar of liability. It'll generally be the case that irrigated production practices, is you're going to have less variability in yield, so it's going to have a lower premium rate of 0.24. The non-irrigated has a premium rate of 0.57. And then those respective premium rates are applied to the liability or the maximum indemnity to determine a total premium, and then the producer pay portion would be 20% of that number. So in it, for irrigated, $8, for a non-irrigated stacked product, $15. And so you do start to begin to see the differentiation between irrigated and non-irrigated in that situation. We've included in this example as well a Limestone County, Alabama illustration. So this would be the northern part of Alabama. And producers can again see that you have the expected county yields, irrigated, non-irrigated. You also then have premium rates that differ by production practice as well, that ultimately affects the total premium and the producer premium. And then finally included in Florida, an illustration for Santa Rosa County, Florida, as well. And these illustrations, again, look at what would be calculations for the liability or the maximum indemnity, and then as well what the producer pay premium would be under each of these examples. And that just gives the producer a sense of the level of protection that's available under a stacked product. You know, whether or not indemnities are actually triggered as we go through 2015 is going to be determined by both movement in price as well as expected yields. And so it's we'll have to see how experience plays out for 2015 to determine whether or not an indemnity is actually triggered. I would like to show just a couple of examples, maybe to provide a little more specificity around how stacks would have behaved in past years. Maybe that helps illustrate this concept a bit more. And first I put up just the, I'll use Edgecombe County, North Carolina as an example. And this chart reflects the RMA yields that are based for that production area. And again, no differentiation between an irrigated and a non-irrigated. This is the non-irrigated yield in Edgecombe County. You look at some other production areas, you'd see two separate yields for that production area. But this would be the history that RMA has observed, and again, this history is going to go into determining that expected yield for 2015 and beyond, and then also RMA will calculate the actual yield. And this would be the type of data that can be downloaded from the Cotton Council website. So based off of this yield experience and then also combining that with the actual changes in the market that occurred, we've gone back and looked at the instances from 2008 through 2013 where there would or would not have been an indemnity calculated or determined under a stacked product. And so again, this is a historical illustration for Edgecombe County, North Carolina. And again, an illustration based off historical data, just to show that yes, in basically this six-year period, there were three out of 6 years that would have generated an indemnity based off of actual experience. Now, we know actual experience or past experience won't necessarily be an indication of future performance, but hopefully it gives a producer a little bit better understanding of how the product might have worked. And in a situation where there can be a decline in revenue, whether it be based off of prices declining from the projected to the harvest price, or whether it be a situation where there was a decline in the yields. So in some instances, the indemnity could be quite large. In some instances, the indemnity would be smaller, such as in 2013. I would say also, too, if we once we were to know the final yield data for 2014, that was a situation where the price movements there might have also triggered an indemnity. Let me point out that these are gross indemnities under stacks. They do not reflect the fact that or the premium that would be paid by the producer, and that premium is going to be paid in each of those years. But so any premium paid would be netted out of those numbers. But this would be the situation for Edgecombe County, North Carolina. Again, using actual experience based off of the RMA data. Now I'll just quickly put up charts just to give you a feel for how it would have looked in all of those examples that we talked about. Here are the numbers that were calculated using Isle of Wight County, Virginia. And based off of those calculations in the market, you actually see that it would have triggered in 4 out of 6 years. And again, irrigated, non-irrigated, for purposes of these two counties, the indemnities are the same because it's working off of the same policy. When we move into South Carolina with a differentiation in yields and historical experience, we begin to see a difference in the experience between irrigated and non-irrigated. In some cases, you'd actually see an irrigated indemnity being larger than non-irrigated, but in some years we see the reverse is true. You can see the indemnities that would have been triggered historically had this product been in place over the 6-year period. Looking at it in Tift County, Georgia, again, see it, and you note some years where there may have been an irrigated policy that was, or an irrigated indemnity that was triggered, and some years it'd be a non-irrigated. So it won't always be the same. It'll be the experience, the collective experience of non-irrigated producers for the non-irrigated product, the collective experience of irrigated producers for the irrigated product. Again, just kind of flipping through and let you see those. Same type of story when we look at Limestone County, Alabama, triggered in 2000. In many cases, between 2008 and 2011, but in this particular county, not in either 12 or 2013. And then finally, in Santa Rosa County, Florida, can see the calculations as well. So that's an illustration of essentially some of the features of stacks and some of the designs of stacks. I do want to go a bit further, though, and explain one important concept, and that is the relationship of stacks to existing or underlying coverage. And be aware that stacks can be the only insurance policy that is purchased on an acre, or it can be purchased in addition to cat coverage or an existing buy-up product. It's in general designed to be purchased in addition to a producer's existing coverage. So it provides some additional risk management for that acre of cotton above and beyond the risk management choice that producers have already made. But having said that, I want to point out that one important feature of stacks is that the lower band of the stacks coverage may not overlap the coverage level of the other insurance policy on that same acre. Or to put that another way, if you have, and looking at it graphically, if the producer has existing coverage that is above 70%, and we do have a number of acres that may purchase currently 75 or 80% yield or revenue protection, more often revenue protection. If those producers have selected that level of individual coverage, or that level of an underlying product, then their stacks coverage must start at that percentage and go up to as high as 90. It effectively has to be something smaller than that full stacks coverage. And again, stacks can be added. It can be the only policy. It can be added to lower levels of coverage, and just realize there's an uncovered range if producers choose to do that. It could sit directly on top of 70% coverage, but again, if producers look at or have underlying coverage above 70%, then that would require them to purchase a smaller stacks product. Those percentages may not overlap. And it could be the case, too. You know, we've talked about stacks being purchased on top of individual coverage. You know, we do still have existing area-wide products available for cotton in some locations. So if that's an option, stacks can also be purchased on top of an existing RP product if a producer wanted to look at their full coverage being based on individual coverage. So just be aware that in places where RP is offered, and it's not offered in all locations, stacks will be, but in places where that is an offering, producers are able to pair up stacks with RP as well. Now, a couple of considerations as producers make this choice, because it is a new option for 2015 in terms of now the ability to add another insurance product to that same acre. So if you have, for a producer who may currently be doing 75 or 80% coverage, they can certainly continue to keep that same level of coverage and then either add a stacked product from 75 to 90 or from 80 to 90. Producers could also look at the mix, whether or not they wanted to adjust their coverage, their individual coverage, down to 70% and add a 90 to 70 stacks policy on top of that. And that would normally, when producers do the calculation, since stacks is an area-wide product, it's typically going to have a lower premium rating than an individual policy, and it is also going to carry an 80% premium subsidy. So if producers consider this option, there is the opportunity for premium savings by perhaps bringing that coverage to 70 and then adding stacks on top of it. But I think what producers need to be aware of is that's a trade-off between individual coverage and area-wide coverage. When we talk about, you know, how to best create that combination for coverage levels above 70%. And I think that's why it's important for producers to evaluate their own historical experience with yields and how that compares to the area-wide experience. And again, going back to the database on the National Cotton Council's website, producers can look at that last 15 to 20 years of data, and they can get a better feel for whether or not their own individual yield experience correlates with the county or with the production area. Because, again, producers just need to be aware, yes, there can be premium savings there, but to achieve those premium savings means reducing some of the individual coverage back down to 70% and adding more area-wide protection. So I just encourage producers to evaluate that. They really have to assess that. That's kind of an individual decision based off their, you know, one being budget-driven, but also being driven by their risk tolerance and risk preferences. So a point to keep in mind. I don't know if we have any questions. We can certainly entertain those at any time. If anybody would like to raise a question, we're keeping an eye on the chat window as we move this presentation along and encourage producers to type a question in, and we can always take a break at any time. I would open it up now just to see if anybody had a question they would like to ask at this point before we move forward into the... So if you're able to do that, then we certainly will entertain those questions as we move along. And we can come back and have a chance to do so at any. I'm not seeing any at this point, so we'll move along and talk about another new crop insurance feature that's available for 2015. And that is what's referred to as the supplemental coverage option. And that's a new product that is available for upland cotton, but it's also available for other crops as well. We're going to focus obviously on upland cotton, but it's a new provision that was authorized by the 2014 Farm Bill. In the case of upland cotton, it's another choice for producers. So like we've said, producers have the ability to obviously purchase stacks. That's a voluntary decision. It's one they make each year. But as an alternative to stacks, they would have the option to purchase on those acres what is referred to as a supplemental coverage option. both products cannot be purchased on the same acre, but there is the ability to, on some acres, do SCO and on some acres do stacks. And they're somewhat a similar concept in the sense that both products are trying to address and provide protection for that higher level of risk that, again, producers may not have affordable options today. But there are a couple of key differences to be aware of. One is that SCO must have an underlying insurance policy in which to be able to be added to. And effectively, the supplemental coverage option is a way to provide coverage for a proportion of a producer's individual deductible. So if a producer has that underlying coverage at around 65%, then obviously they have a 35% deductible. So this would be a way to have a product that would provide protection for a portion of that 35% deductible. Now, whether or not and the determination of that level of production is based off of experience at the county level. So in that sense, it's similar to stacks in the way that stacks is triggered off of county experience. SCO would be triggered off county experience. It's not triggered off of an individual's own experience, but triggered off the county experience, and it will depend on county, either county yield or county revenue. If a producer has an underlying yield product, then SCO is triggered off of the county yield experience. In that sense, it's similar to the old, what was referred to as the GRP product. If the producer has an individual revenue product, then SCO will be based off of the county revenue experience. So again, it depends on the underlying coverage, and it effectively requires that the county, either yield or revenue, experience a loss and it beyond a specified deductible. And if that county does experience that loss, then that percent of loss beyond the deductible is applied to the dollar value of the producer's indemnity. Okay, so it is, again, a way for it provide to the dollar value of the producer's own deductible, not indemnity. So it's a way to try to provide protection for a portion of the deductible of the underlying product. Now, the deductible under SCO is 14%, which basically means that indemnities are going to be triggered if the county yield or revenue falls below 86% of the expected yield or revenue. And so, again, there must be a 14% loss in the county before any indemnities are triggered. But at the point at which that indemnity is triggered, then the amount of the shortfall is essentially adjusted based off the value of the producer's individual indemnity. Now, in the case of stacks, it was a 10% deductible. So here it's a slightly larger deductible at 14%. But one key difference between SCO and stacks is that stacks would extend from 90 down to 70. SCO will actually trigger and extend all the way down to the coverage level of the underlying policy. So if the producer has an underlying policy at 55 or 60%, then SCO will effectively be going from 86 down to that underlying coverage, that either that 55 or 60%. So it has the potential to be even a wider coverage band than stacks by virtue of it being able to go down to that underlying coverage. There's a difference, though. The premium subsidy is 65%, so it's not quite the same, quite as high a premium subsidy as what's included in stacks. And so if producers evaluate this choice, then there's some considerations to take into account. One is underlying coverage is required for SCO, but not for stacks. They're both area-wide triggers. So the yield or revenue in the case of SCO, strictly revenue in the case of stacks. Deductible is slightly larger in SCO than in stacks. And again, the coverage band can go down to 70% under stacks, but down to the underlying coverage under SCO. Premium subsidy is 65% under SCO, 80% under stacks. In the case of SCO, the indemnity is paid on a percentage of the individual's deductible. In the case of Stacks, it's paid on the county shortfall, adjusted by the protection factor. And in some ways, the relationship between a producer's individual deductible is going to reflect their own APH yield. So in some ways, the relationship between a producer's APH yield and the county expected yield acts the same way as or a similar way to the protection factor. In other words, it has the ability to scale up whatever's triggered at the county level, but since it's applied to the dollar value of the individual's deductible. So I think if a producer is evaluating these choices between Stacks and SCO, there's some key questions to look at in that determination. And one goes back to the point I just mentioned. How does a producer's APH yield compare to the expected county yield? Because, again, the dollar value of the individual's deductible is going to reflect their own yield. If their APH yield is higher than the expected county yield for that production practice, then you're effectively scaling up any activity that might be triggered under SCO county experience. Likewise, if the producer's APH was below the county expected yield, then it's effectively scaling it down. There's no hard and fast rule here as to when, say, SCO might be preferred over Stacks. We've generally looked at some calculations that would suggest, well, when this comes into play, might be if a producer's APH was, say, in the range of 30 to 40% above the expected county yield for that production practice. That's the type of yield differential that may make that producer want to look at SCO as an alternative stack. I think the other question would be where is the producer's underlying coverage? Is it less than 70%? Because, again, if it was less than 70%, that would take advantage of SCO being able to extend down to that lower coverage level. So that may be, those are two questions, I think, to factor into those calculations. But again, remember, they're both triggered off of county experience, and there is differences in the deductible. Stacks will trigger at a higher level than SCO, and there's going to be differences in the premium subsidies. We've included, and I'm going to talk about an illustration here I'll use the Isle of Wight County, Virginia. So going back to the Stacks option that's available for Isle of Wight, that's shown in the first column of numbers there, and then compare that to an SCO option or two different SCO options. The first SCO option assumes that a producer has underlying coverage at 70%, and the second assumes that the producer has underlying coverage at 60%. Now, one point I do want to make now, in terms of, and this wasn't explicitly stated earlier, but in terms of SCO for cotton, it will be based off of the same and offered on the same production areas for cotton as Stacks is for cotton. It will also be based off of RMA yields. So all the exact same calculations that are used for Stacks for determining expected and actual yields for that county or production area will be used in the determination of SCO for upland cotton. Now, I think if we talk about the SCO that's available for other commodities such as corn, soybeans, winter wheat in some areas, sorghum, in that case, those SCO products, I believe, are still going to be triggered off of NASH yields for 2015. But in the case of SCO for upland cotton, it's using the same yields, and that's illustrated when we look at row two, that the expected county yield for Isle of Wight of 991 pounds per acre is the same whether it's a Stacks or an SCO. So if you have the same expected county revenue under both products, but where we start to see a difference is in row number four in terms of determining the trigger level for the expected revenue at either 90% or 86%. So by applying the 86% to SCO, becomes a slightly smaller number than what you would have in Stacks. What we also see is that in the case of SCO, as compared to stacks where you've got a 20% coverage band and a 1.2 protection factor, that's giving a liability or a maximum indemnity for the producer of $155. If we look at an 86 to 70 coverage band under SCO, and assuming that the producer's APH is equivalent to the county yield, then it's a smaller liability or smaller maximum indemnity of $103. Now, if a producer had that lower coverage level so that they had that wider coverage band on SCO in the far right column, then you see the maximum indemnity is up to $167. There are differences in ratings depending on how the band is defined, so there will be differences in premiums. The fact that you've got a difference in premium subsidies begins to illustrate itself in that last row. Stacks would be in a cost to producer $11. You'd pay $12 for an SCO policy that was providing less coverage, but again, that's a reflection of the smaller premium subsidy. So be aware that SCO may not always be the right choice. It depends on certain conditions. It does have the potential, as you see out in the far right column, to offer a bit more protection, but also you have to have a deeper loss in the county with which to actually realize that indemnity, and it does come with a higher premium charge. And again, we'll, in the interest of time, just kind of scroll through these examples, but the same type of calculations that were illustrated for Isle of Wight have been repeated for those selected counties in each state in the Southeast region. And as you download download the PowerPoint, you can look at those illustrations in much more detail, but we've included them. And once you get into South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and Florida, you'll see illustrations for both producers who are doing an irrigated practice as well as producers who are doing a non-irrigated practice. Because again, the choices are going to be either irrigated or non-irrigated. And I'm just kind of quickly moving through and let you look at those at a later time. But a number of choices are available. And again, I think this certainly expands the menu of insurance products that producers have, and I think there are a number of ways to try to customize these products going forward. As we've said, as we've been conducting Farm Bill meetings throughout the year, we encourage producers to spend time with their crop insurance agent. They've always had a lot of options for customizing coverage. Now we've just taken those options and expanded them quite a lot. And so again, just deciding what type of stacks product to add, whether that's a stacks or an SCO product, understanding all the new options that are available to producers to try to come up with the best risk management coverage you can is going to be very important. And those were two of the key changes that were included in the Farm Bill. But be aware that there are other enhancements that are going to be available in 2015 as well, other enhancements included within the crop insurance title. One is what is referred to as enterprise unit coverage. So that's a feature that came about in the 2008 Farm Bill. It comes with a higher premium subsidy, usually a savings in producer premium cost. It's been enhanced. Formerly, it was all your acreage under one policy. Now it's been enhanced so that it can be separated and if the producer qualifies, be able to do enterprise unit coverage by irrigated and non-irrigated practices. So some increased flexibility in terms of how that enterprise unit coverage is structured. The Farm Bill also includes flexibility in terms of the coverage levels by practice. So if a producer would like to select one coverage level for their irrigated and a separate coverage level for their non-irrigated, that is now a choice for 2015 as well. And that could come into play as a producer looks at how best to perhaps complement their existing coverage by those practice levels with stacks or SCO. And then one new feature that was just announced in the past few weeks in terms of its availability for 2015 is an adjustment in the APH yield. So the APH yield for each individual producer is now going to be determined by looking at some additional criteria that may benefit producers. And essentially, the Farm Bill sets up sets up an option that looks at the experience in the county, the yield experience in the county, and they determine whether or not the yield for the county in that year is less than 50% of the 10-year county average. That's the criteria by which it would be determined to be a bad year in the county. If the county yield meets that criteria, essentially it suffered a 50% or greater loss, then the producer may opt or have the choice to exclude that year from their APH yield calculation. So it's essentially going to look over the past 10 years of history, or the past years of history, to go into a producer's database. RMA will make a determination of the county's yield in that year, how it compares to the 10-year average. That will establish the years that are eligible for a producer to delete from their APH or exclude from their APH calculation. Now, it may be the case that that was not a low-yielding year for the producer, even though the county may have suffered a loss. So just because it's an option doesn't mean that a producer would choose to exclude it. Also, the number of eligible years are not only based on the experience of that county, but it also can be expanded to include the experience of contiguous counties. And these determinations will be done by production practice, so irrigated and non-irrigated to the fullest extent possible. So this, again, is just be a feature that producers would certainly need to talk to their insurance agent about to determine in their county what are the eligible years to be excluded from the APH, and then which years does it make sense for that individual, which of those years does it make sense for the producer to exclude. And those are really the only details that we know at this point. We anticipate, and what RMA has announced is that more details will come out this month. So we hope to learn more about how they're doing those calculations and which years are going to be excluded. Now, I'm aware that, and producers will certainly see this as they work through those calculations, this will affect the premium cost, because it will have the chance to increase the APH yield, increase the effective coverage, so it does come with a premium cost. We're still not sure exactly how it may affect ratings or the cost to the producer. That's, again, further information that we should learn sometime this month. We also understand there's a new peanut revenue coverage product that's going to be available as well. And then the final point on insurance products as they relate to changes in the Farm Bill is the fact that conservation compliance is now required for purchasing those insurance products with a premium subsidy. Conservation compliance has been a long-time feature of eligibility for FFA-delivered programs, but now it has come over into the crop insurance world. So be aware that the form AB-1026 will need to be on file by June 1 of 2015 to ensure eligibility for that. Well, a lot of new information in the crop insurance side, a lot of new choices for cotton producers, hopefully some choices that will be beneficial certainly to the risk management options that are available. Now we're going to, again, we'll encourage you, anyone to continue to type in any questions that you may have about further details that we didn't cover on either Stax or SCO, but we do want to transition a little bit away from the insurance side and just talk about some of the other features primarily in the Title I portion of the Farm Bill, and specifically as they relate to cotton that producers need to be aware of. Before we do that, we just appreciate there was a question that has popped up, and I'm glad that question was raised, because this is a point to reiterate to producers in terms of the difference on Stax and SCO. That is a change from how producers have expected indemnities or received indemnities in the past. When indemnities were triggered off of existing insurance or your existing individual experience, then once that experience was known, then indemnities could be processed. With a Stax and SCO being triggered off of area-wide or county-level experience, essentially RMA has to calculate all of those production records from the previous harvest before being able to deliver the indemnities. So in that sense, expect any indemnities under stacks and SCO to be paid sometime in the late spring or the early summer following harvest. So that's just particularly from a cash flow and a planning perspective, be aware that those indemnities will be paid out several months after harvest, and they will extend sometime toward the middle part of, in this case, since we're looking at a product being purchased on the 2015 crop and then data collected from the 2015 harvest. We would talk about the actual first SCO and stacks indemnities being paid sometime toward the middle part of 2016. So be aware that there is a delay there, however, producers should also be aware that premiums and all the premium charges that we've talked about would still be required to be paid sometime in the fall of 2015. So there will be a payment of premium, and then subsequently, if any indemnity is determined for the production area, those indemnities would be paid sometime in the late spring, summer of 2016. It's hopefully as soon as RMA can collect those production records and calculate that actual yield. So again, a couple of key points that producers need to consider from a planning and a cash flow perspective. And again, if we can always jump back to any of these issues with questions, but thanks for that question or that clarification. Let's move along and talk about a few other farm bill issues, and specifically remind producers as they consider their decisions on that have to be made regarding programs that are administered within Title I of the Farm Bill, and specifically the price loss coverage or the ag risk coverage, which applies to covered commodities. We have a couple of decision windows that are open now, essentially until February 27th. Producers have the decision, or producers/landowners have the decision, to retain or reallocate covered commodity bases and update payment yields. That is, as the Farm Bill language, the statutory language, has structured that decision or defined that decision of retaining or reallocating covered commodity bases or updating payment yields, that is a landowner decision. And that's the specific terminology used in the statutory language. As we understand it, based off of FSA notices, that if they tenant has the power of attorney that specifically selects all programs and all decisions, then that also gives the tenant the ability to make that decision on reallocation of bases and updating payment yields. But again, specific that we have that power of attorney and that it checks all decisions, all programs. Now, as we've been doing these meetings, we always, I think, encourage that the communication between the tenant and the landowner to the greatest extent possible on all these decisions, because the key to these decisions that are being made right now, both in terms of the reallocation and the updating of payment yields, and then also is the fact that those are decisions that are with the farm for the life of the Farm Bill. So these are one-time decisions. They're irrevocable. So be aware of that decision. But that's one of the options that's there, is to reallocate covered commodity bases or update payment yields. And when we talk about covered commodities, we're talking about grains, oil seeds, rice, peanuts. Now, the other choice that producers have to make is the decision for those covered commodities on a farm-by-farm, base-by-base commodity base choice is to determine whether a producer wants to be enrolled in the PLC program or the ARC program. And PLC is a price loss coverage. It's similar to a prior target price deficiency payment program, where there's a reference price established for those covered commodities, and then if the market year average price falls below that reference price, then that would trigger a payment under a PLC. And then there is the ARC, and effectively here we're talking about, to be more explicit, an ARC based off of the ARC based off of county experience. So there is a situation of where there's an ARC option based off the individual farm. In that case, all commodities would have to select ARC individual. We're focused more on the choice between PLC and the ARC county level, where you can choose that on a farm by a per farm and per covered commodity based option. And ARC county is a revenue based product. So whether any payments are made under that will depend on the experience at the county revenue compared to a benchmark revenue that's established based off of a 5-year Olympic average price, a 5-year Olympic average yield. And it covers, ARC covers, has a coverage from 86% down to 76%. So producers really have to evaluate that decision. There are decision tools, which we'll talk about at the end of the presentation, that producers can put in their data and look at which might be the best option for the farm and for the commodity. So again, windows are open for that decision. It needs to occur by either February 27th in the allocation decision. If a decision is not made there, then the farm retains basis and would retain existing CCP payment yields. In the case of the PLC or ARC, if there's no decision made by March 31, then as we understand it, the default decision would be to go to PLC, but there is also a very significant penalty for not making that decision, because the producer would not be eligible for any payments under PLC for 2014 crop and would only apply to and would be in the PLC program for 2015 and beyond. So producers certainly encouraged to make that decision. And I think too, when you look at covered commodities and all the commodities that are under there, that's I think roughly 21 commodities. Producers are encouraged, even if they haven't had a history of planting some of those crops, to make a decision for all those commodities just to maintain their options, and we'll talk about why that's important. And then later on in the late spring and summer would be the actual sign up for the 2014 and 2015 crops. And then if there are any payments that are due under PLC or ARC for 14, those would occur in October of 2015. So essentially there's a year lag between harvest, when the crop is harvested, and when any payments under ARC or PLC would be received. Again, just an important thing, important feature for producers to be aware of. Now, I've talked about PLC and ARC county in the decision process that has to be done for that. I do want to talk about one of the key features as it relates to upland cotton and how it can come into play or have a bearing on the ARC and PLC program for other commodities. In the 2014 Farm Bill, farms that had upland cotton base on them in 2013, specifically, I believe as of the September 30th, 2013 date, those upland cotton base acres are relabeled generic base for the life of the 2014 Farm Bill. So effectively, the other way to think about it is, if you had a farm that had generic base on it in the 2008 Farm Bill, it is now labeled generic base for the 2014 Farm Bill. And that's important because, and in many cases, most cotton farmers are diversified and produce other crops, that in those calculations, that when those crops are planted, generic base will be attributed to those covered commodities for purposes of determining or calculating the payment acres for that program. So generic base acres are important in the farm, but they're also important because if a producer plants peanuts, corn, soybeans on that farm that has generic base, then those planted acres are attributed to those payment acres. So just be aware that attribution is occurring based off formulas that are defined in the Farm Bill. We had a question, so I'll go ahead and address it now because it relates to the decision of SCO and ARC, and I and uh, I appreciate the question because it's a point of clarification that as producers make a decision between PLC and ARC, and both of those are administered by FSA. So both of, ARC and PLC are administered by FSA, and that's a program they can sign up for. If a producer enrolls their farm and their covered commodity, and I'll use the example of if you have a farm that has corn base on it, if a producer enrolls that farm, corn base, into ARC, that producer is not eligible to purchase the supplemental coverage option on any corn that may be planted on that farm for 2015 and beyond. So be aware when producers, when you look at evaluating this choice, and again, ARC is an FSA-delivered program, so it's not a product that producers will purchase, but it is a program they will sign up for. And it's a revenue-based program that's paid on, in the case of ARC County, it's paid on 85% of base acres, and it covers essentially from 86 down to 76% of that benchmark county revenue. But the Farm Bill was very explicit that if ARC County is chosen for that farm and for that covered commodity base, then the new insurance product, SCO, and it's also an area-wide insurance product that's essentially assuring a producer's portion of a producer's deductible from 86 down to that underlying coverage. SCO cannot be purchased for corn if corn was signed up. If that corn base was signed up in the PLC program for corn, then any subsequent plantings of corn could purchase SCO on those corn acres. So that is, and as you work through a decision tool to determine how the two options may compare, it's really the case of signing up a base in PLC and then a producer that may subsequently plant that crop, evaluating, well, what would be any potential benefits to SCO that would be in addition to the PLC program, and compare that to signing up those corn base acres in the ARC program and then not being able to purchase SCO on any future plantings of corn on that farm. So that was a good question. There are rules there that producers need to be aware of. There are some rules there in terms of how that, but just be aware of that decision of ARC versus SCO and the interplay that can occur. So again, I would just to reiterate a few points, and I think many of those have been covered because we've had questions about generic base. It is a new concept. It does require some thinking about how it interacts with the plantings and how it eventually affects pavement acres, because essentially in this case, you really have a coupling of benefits for those covered commodities to the planting decision when there are covered commodity planted acres that are planted on a farm with generic base. And again, attribution will occur. The attribution is based off of formulas that are defined in the Farm Bill. But if you had a farm with cotton base in 2013, you now have a farm with a generic base. If you have multiple covered commodities planted on the farm, it does get to be a bit more complicated. We've included a fairly straightforward example that would just look at a farm that has, in 2015, 100 acres of generic base and 100 acres of wheat base. And we've made the assumption in this example that you have 100 acres of the farm that is planted to cotton and 100 acres of the farm that is planted to wheat. So one covered commodity is planted on the farm, and that is wheat. And then you also have planted acres of cotton. The formulas from the Farm Bill are really what determine that middle part of the table that says you look at each individual covered commodity that's planted as the percent of the total covered commodity that's planted. In this case, we only have one, so it makes the example a bit more straightforward, where you have 100 acres of wheat divided by, or its percentage of the total covered commodity planted, which is wheat again. So 100% or all of the covered commodities that were planted are wheat. that 100%, then those 100 acres would be attributed essentially to the generic base. So you can attribute plantings up to the number of generic base acres. You can't, a farm will not attribute more generic acres than what's actually more generic base than what they have on the farm. Likewise, you will only attribute the number of acres that are actually planted to that covered commodity. You'll only attribute the number of generic acres that are actually planted to that covered commodity. But in this case, we've got a situation where the plantings of the covered commodity equals the generic base. So all of the generic base, all 100 acres, are attributed to wheat for the purpose of the 2015 program. That 100 acres of generic base that's attributed to the wheat program is added to the existing wheat base of 100 acres that's, regardless of plantings, that's always eligible for the ARC or PLC that the producer signed up on. And so essentially the effective base for 2015 is 200 acres. ARC or PLC, ARC County or PLC, pays on 85% of that. So if there were a payment under PLC or ARC County, then it would be paid on 170 acres in that year because of the planting decisions of the farm. As the producer moved to 2016 and adjust those planting decisions, then that would all of those calculations would change. The producer always has the generic base. The generic base is always generic base. Its attribution can change from one year to the next based off of the individual planting decisions in that year. But as you move from one year to the next, then the attribution will change based on planting decisions. It's always generic based. So again, be aware of this. Be aware of this situation. Be aware of the formulas. If you have multiple covered commodities, then effectively the generic base is attributed based off shares, depending on how much of each individual covered commodity is planted. But it does come into play, and it does affect the payments that are received under those various products. Let me now talk about the Upland Cotton Marketing Loan. And I alluded to this going all the way back to one of the introductory slides, that the marketing loan is maintained in this farm bill, but there are changes. The changes were again designed to address and resolve the trade dispute that we had with Brazil for a number of years. But now the Upland Cotton Marketing Loan looks at, in determining the level, it looks at a formula for the average of the AWP for the two most recently completed marketing years as of October 1 in the year prior to planting. And what that effectively means that to determine the loan rate for 2015, it will look back at October 1 of 2014. And it will determine, okay, the two most recently completed marketing years for cotton, which we talk about the August 1 to July 31 marketing year. It will look in that instance, the two most recently completed marketing years was the 2012 and the 2013 marketing year. What was the average of the adjusted world price, which is that price determined by USDA for purposes of loan redemption? And it will look at that and determine how that comes into play in terms of establishing the loan rate for base quality cotton. If that two-year average AWP is above 52 cents per pound, the loan rate for base quality cotton is set at 52. If that two-year average AWP is below 52 cents but greater than 45, then the loan rate is set at that level of the AWP. If the two-year average AWP were to be below 45, then the loan rate for base quality cotton is set at 45 cents. So there is a range with which the loan rate can change, but just be aware that it can change. Now, this just applies to the establishment of the base quality loan rate. Premium and discounts that are determined for qualities other than base, that still occurs as it did under the 2008 Farm Bill, so any premium or discount would be added or subtracted to that base quality loan rate to determine the loan rate for an individual quality of cotton. Also, redemption at the AWP still occurs as it did under the old Farm Bill, as with storage credits. Well, and what we already know, too, is that for 2015, the base loan rate will again be at 52 cents, which is the level that it was fixed at under the 08 Farm Bill, and it's the level that's in effect for 2014. So it w- will be for 2015 as well, 52 cent loan rate. But one important change that is applicable now under this Farm Bill is the fact that any marketing loan gains and loan deficiency payments are now subject to the payment limits established under the new Farm Bill. This is a significant change from the 2008 Farm Bill. Under the old Farm Bill, there were no limits applied to marketing loan gains and LDTs, but now marketing loan gains and LDTs across all commodities, with the exception of peanuts. Peanuts still operates under a separate limit, but when we talk about cotton, grains, oil seeds, rice, those marketing loan gains and LDTs, as well as any payments received under the ARC programs or PLC programs, all of those apply to $125,000 payment limit per person or legal entity. And again, separate $125,000 limits for any payments received under peanut programs. These are applicable to the FSA delivered programs. It does not apply to crop insurance premium subsidies. Now, with the changes that we have seen in commodity markets over the past 6 months, first and foremost, those changes that we've experienced in the cotton market, where prices have declined, and we now have had for the last several weeks an AWP that is below the loan rate, we are generating marketing loan gains and loan deficiency payments. It's been as high as 6 cents a pound. It's running between 4 and 5 cents a pound currently, but producers need to be aware that those payments, those LDTs and those marketing loan gains are attributing to that $125,000 limit. That's creating challenges for the industry, and it's creating challenges for USDA, because this is the first time that USDA has had to deal with limits being applied to marketing loan gains at the same time that they have to directly attribute any payments for the purposes of applying the limit. So we have direct attribution and now trying to attribute and keep track of those marketing loan gains and LDPs that occur throughout the marketing year. Right now, USDA is still in the process, and the industry is working with USDA to try to come up with both some interim and some longer-term processes for tracking the payments. And USDA is not at that point yet to really be able to know exactly where a producer sits relative to their limit. They're working to try to get to that point. That at some time prior, I would say likely late summer, early fall, but sometime prior to October 1 of 15, get to a point so that they can reconcile and determine where a producer sits relative to their limit based off of the marketing loan gains and loan deficiency payments that they've received up to that point. Because once October 1 comes around, then if a producer has those base acres for those other covered commodities, then ARC and PLC payments would then also be attributed to that same limit. And this raises this question of the potential for overpayments, raises the question for producers who potentially reach the limit just simply based off their marketing loan gains or their LDPs. And at some point, USDA will reconcile, and if there has been overpayment, there will you will have producers responsible for that overpayment. If a producer marketed or they were redeemed their cotton or claimed their LDP at the county officer through an LSA, then USDA will go directly back to the producer for that overpayment. If the producer had marketed through a cooperative, then you would have a situation where USDA will first go back to the cooperative for any overrepayment by its members, but then you can, I think, expect that the co-op will also then look to its members for that overpayment. So ultimately, it comes back to the producer, but it's just producers need to be aware of this development and the fact that their gains, in many cases, the decision as exactly when their cotton is redeemed, it's either being done by the co-op or it's being done by a merchant for which they may have entered or signed a Form 605. Producers are encouraged to keep track of that. We have a Farm Bill handout that is it's one we used at the in-person meetings, but it's a briefing paper that we will have available on our website. There is a one-pager We've shared this with the industry, just a short briefing paper on the limits and just encouraging producers to be aware, to try to find out where they stand in terms of that limit and be aware of the changes. So that's an important change. We also have in this farm bill still a continuation of means testing to determine eligibility for payments. But it's a different test than we had under the 2008 Farm Bill. This now looks at a total AGI. It looks at a three-year average adjusted gross income to determine if that is in excess of $900,000. If it is in excess of $900,000, then that producer is ineligible for any PLC, ARC payments, marketing loan gains, or loan deficiency payments. It does not make your cotton ineligible for the loan. It simply makes that cotton ineligible to be redeemed at the AWP or with a marketing loan gain. Producers are also required to annually certify that they meet this AGI test, so they must file a CCC 941. And I think in many cases, those forms, you still have some transition assistance payments for cotton that are waiting to be conveyed out to the countryside if a producer has not filed that 941 form. So it is important that those are filed. Be aware that those, even though this is essentially a self-certification, it will eventually be verified by the Internal Revenue Service. USDA was going through a process where they were trying to verify with the IRS prior to allowing either that cotton to be placed in the loan or redeemed. Fortunately, that's been streamlined, and we think that's taken care of a lot of the issues that we were hearing from out in the countryside. But so as long as the form's on file, then a producer can redeem. But just be aware that it will eventually be checked. If there were some payments that were made that were determined to be ineligible, then repayment will be required. So you're encouraged to have that form on file. We just closed this webinar with making you aware, if you're not already aware, of just some of the tools that are available to producers. This Farm Bill has a lot of new concepts. It has a lot of new programs that require some time to understand all the moving parts and the interrelationships that occur. Producers are encouraged to use decision tools that are available. Texas A&M has put a lot of effort into creating a decision tool that can help a producer make that PLC versus ARC decision. University of Illinois also has a toolbox up as well that can be useful. USDA has educational material available to producers, both on the crop insurance side as well as the FSA-delivered programs. We'd encourage you to look at the RMA Farm Bill page. One tool that has come online in recent weeks that was developed by RMA is a crop insurance decision tool, which is, to the extent we've had a chance to work with that decision tool, appears to be a nice interface that allows producers to go in and select their crop, and in the case of cotton, select their APH yield, put that in, select different underlying coverage levels, select different combinations of a stacks or an FCO, and get a better sense of what type of coverage is there, what type of producer premium calculations would occur. So we hope that can also be an important educational tool. And likewise, FSA has information as well. We would also encourage producers to avail themselves to the opportunities that are out there for education. I don't think this can be a one-time exposure and familiarize yourself with all the features. So extension is out and about in the various states. So again, take an opportunity to attend additional meetings, because there are important decisions that face producers over the next several weeks and months. And in the case of the FSA-delivered programs, those decisions stay with that farm for the farm. Producers are encouraged certainly be diligent in their efforts to understand and make the right decisions. And then I would just open it up. That's all the information we want to share. I thank everybody for taking this time out of their morning to join us for this webinar. I've got myself as well as other council staff here that if questions come up, then we'll stay on the line and be responding to those questions as well as we see any pop up in the chat window. But again, we would also just wish you a happy holidays, and we wish you a prosperous 2015, and we thank you for your support of the National Cotton Council and for joining us today. There was a question here, and we appreciate one of the questions on the decisions to update the basin yield. Are those independent or linked? Those are actually independent decisions, and actually it's a producers can go through the decision of a reallocation of base, and they can look at if they choose to reallocate, and if they make that decision to reallocate, the reallocation decision is actually dictated by formulas in the Farm Bill that look at their planting history. And the concept being that it would, I guess, realign those covered commodity bases more appropriately with the planting patterns on the farm over the last 4 or 5 years. So they can choose to reallocate or not, and that's one decision. And then they can move over and look at basically what is in the decision as whether they would like to update their payment yields for the purposes of the PLC program. Because that's where I think technically, regardless of whether a farm is going to enroll in PLC or ARC, they're going through the update process on their yield, but from the operation of the program, it materially only affects PLC because it determines the payment yield. And if producers have the opportunity to update their payment yields, if it's to the benefit that it increases the payment yield, then that would be the way to go in terms of that. But those are independent decisions. So thank you for that question. And we're continuing to watch the chat window. Can anybody type any additional questions right now? And again, we always encourage you. We're certainly accessible through our email. And so we have a general email that is just info@cotton.org. Feel free to contact us at any time and send us questions, and we'll certainly provide the answer in as quick a time as we can. So thank you again for participating, and we're adjourned.